a Radio Catskill. From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Well, coming up, we get an update on the Wayne Pike Career and Tech Center when Tim Bruno talks to Liam Mayo of the River Reporter. And measles is in our region. Patricio Rubio talks to Dr. Golydick for info on the virus and info on how to stay safe from the virus. But let's start off with a lot of news that we have from New York State, where yesterday, junior Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was pushing back against cuts to Medicaid. About a third of New Yorkers are enrolled in the federally subsidized health care program. President Trump wants to slash Medicaid funding and limit who's eligible. Senator Gillibrand visited a hospital in the Adirondacks yesterday and spoke out against these proposed cuts. Emily Russell reports.
The Medicaid cuts are part of President Trump's big, beautiful bill. A few days ago, the White House released an advertisement for his broad landmark legislation.
It will include the biggest tax cuts, regulation cuts, military supremacy, and just about everything else. We will cut more.
But to offset all that, the big, beautiful bill decreases spending for some key federal programs like Medicaid. According to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, the bill would reduce Medicaid spending by nearly $800 million. Democrats like Senator Kirsten Gillibrand warn that will hurt many Americans.
This big, beautiful bill is not a big, beautiful bill. It is a big, beautiful betrayal.
Gillibrand was in Saranac Lake on Monday, where she toured Adirondack Medical Center. It's the largest hospital in the park and the region's biggest private employer. Gillibrand said that Medicaid cuts would destabilize healthcare across the region, hurting both providers and patients.
Here in the North Country, the numbers are very troubling. Over 2,600 jobs could be eliminated right here in this congressional district, while about 44,000 people would lose their health insurance and 19,000 people would lose access to their nutrition benefits under the SNAP program.
The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, known as SNAP, helps more than 40 million Americans buy groceries. That program faces a cut of nearly $300 million in Trump's big, beautiful bill. The bill passed the House in late May by a one-vote margin. North Country Congresswoman Elise Stefanik said she was proud to be the deciding vote to pass the bill. When it comes to Medicaid, Stefanik has said the changes would, quote, strengthen and secure Medicaid by preventing ineligible people from enrolling. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand said on Monday there was no evidence to support Stefanik's claim.
We don't have a scourge of Medicaid fraud in this country. We have a lot of low-income families who can't afford health care.
In the Adirondacks, many of those families access health care through the Hudson Headwaters Health Network. That network of small clinics gets federal subsidies to serve lower-income regions that are also considered medically underserved. Tucker Slingerlin is the CEO of Hudson Headwaters and met with Gillibrand on Monday. He said one of the biggest impacts of cutting Medicaid is forcing people to rethink their health care because of what it might cost.
When you call the ambulance, you don't want to be thinking about the bill. When you see your provider for routine health care that prevents problems down the road, you do not want to think about the expense, because when people do that, they tend to forego care.
And when people forego care, one minor medical problem could turn into a major life-threatening one. The Senate is currently working on its version of the big, beautiful bill. It's expected to vote on the legislation in the next week or so. In Saranac Lake, I'm Emily Russell for the New York Public News Network.
In Albany, lawmakers have decided on a policy change that will require New York State residents to pay for natural gas hookups even if their house is close to a gas line. As Jung Yoon Han from the New York Public News Network reports, environmental advocates are celebrating the move.
For decades, New York had a policy that would let residents living within 100 feet of a gas line hook up their homes for free, and that cost would be spread among the residents, neighbors, and ratepayers. But state lawmakers voted largely along party lines this week to remove that policy. Democrats say the bill will disincentivize fossil fuel use and help the state reach its environmental sustainability goals. Joanne Simon, a Brooklyn Democrat, co-sponsored the legislation.
It is unfair for you and I to be paying for the hookups of people who are newly connecting to the gas system.
Opponents of the bill claimed it would make energy costs unaffordable for rural New Yorkers. The bill now heads to Governor Kathy Hochul's desk for approval. In Albany, I'm Jung Yoon Han for the New York Public News Network.
And finally, as we wrap up on New York State news, we mark the passing of a major local artist. Bill Vannevar, co-founder of the Ulster County dance troupe Vannevar Caravan, has died at age 81. The nonprofit says he died peacefully Sunday morning, quote, in the arms of his wife and creative partner, Livia, end quote. A folk musician and symphonic composer, Bill Vannevar started the Vannevar Caravan with Livia in 1972. The troupe, which mixes dance styles from different cultures, has performed at major festivals locally and around the world. It plans to hold a celebration of Vannevar's life later this year. The Vannevars spoke with WAMC to mark the troupe's 40th anniversary back in 2012.
It began in 1971 at a Balkan dance festival at Columbia. I had been a folk singer on the road. I was accompanying the Penny Whistlers. And Livia was a student in her last year at NYU School of the Arts and Dance, which is now Tisch. And we met and we
started working together almost immediately.
Thank you to all of our news partners at the New York Public News Network for these reports.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. And it's time for some news from Northeast Pennsylvania, specifically the Wayne Pike Career Tech Center. The new facility is intended to bring expanded vocational education options to students across the region. For the latest on it, Tim Bruno spoke to Liam Mayo of the River Reporter live on Radio Chatskill this morning.
The details that stood out to me was how far along this project was. We understood it to be like the presentation of a feasibility study, there was a feasibility study presented, but the feasibility study had a lot of very concrete details and a very aggressive timeline for completion of this building. They want to have this career and technical center finished by August 2027. So 2 years from now, students will be able to, visit this building and sort of take classes from this career and technical center. While they were just sort of first presenting the details last Monday, the project team said they're already kind of several steps ahead in that process of getting the building complete. They said, I think they had a zoning hearing the next night to go to start getting the permits for construction of that building. So some of the other details they presented were the estimated costs.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's kind of a hefty price tag, $52.8 million.
Yeah, that was the overall price tag for the construction of the building. They included a breakdown of the kinds of grants they were looking to get for that building. So just to read off a couple of the estimated funding sources that they were looking for, between 15 or 1.5 million and 2.5 million of federal earmarks, 5 million to 10 million of PA earmarks. So while they had that $52.8 million overall price tag, the funding they're looking for to get from this is, they're estimating, between $31 million and $49 million. So a lot of this project they're looking to fund through grants, and they have sort of already a huge amount of expressed interest and support from the broader community for this project. So they're not just kind of penciling in those grants as, oh, this would be nice to have. They genuinely believe that they will find the monetary support for this project.
The Wayne Pike Career and Tech Center is supposed to bring expanded vocational education options to students across the region. Can you give us a sense of the kinds of programs that would be offered at the new CTC and Do they reflect the needs of the students and businesses in the local job market?
Yeah. So to pull back for a second, a lot of the programs that are going to get brought into this Career and Technical Center are pre-existing programs at several of the school districts throughout Wayne and Pike counties. There are three primary school districts that are going to form together to create this Career and Technical Center. That's Wallenpaupack, Wayne Highlands, and Western Wayne. And the types of programs that they offer in their current school districts range from like health occupations and sports medicine to building construction and automotive technology to aviation is one of the other programs that they have. And the idea behind the Career and Technical Center is not only will students be able to take any of these courses now, rather than just being constrained to the courses that exist within their own school district, but these career and technical programs will live in a space that is like completely designed for them, rather than kind of just being crammed into back rooms or wherever they fit into retrofitted spaces. One of the details of the current of the new building that's going to sort of help the way these programs go is the programs that would benefit from having kind of an outdoor workshop space will have that outdoors workshop space sort of right in the building. So they're designing this building around the specific needs of all of the specific programs that they have. And just quickly to address the other part of what you said with the need from this for from local businesses, that's been one aspect that the Wallenpaupack superintendent has just kind of consistently emphasized throughout this process. He emphasized that again on Monday, where he said that he has talked to the economic development corporations of Wayne and Pike counties throughout the process of putting together this Career and Technical Center. And one of the things that he continues to hear from them, that they continue to hear from businesses and corporations looking to come into Wayne and Pike counties, is the question of, do you have a trained workforce? So this Career and Technical Education Center is kind of going to be huge for the students of Wayne and Pike counties, but it's also just going to be huge for the business community and for the economic development of the region. And kind of both of those factors explain the sort of broad community support for this project.
Yeah, the real demand for this kind of hands-on, career-focused training, it seems. You've previously reported on Wallenpaupack's aviation training program. I do want to ask you a little bit more about that, because you mentioned those other programs that have been around in these school districts. How does that one serve as an example of what this new center could make possible for students?
Yeah, and just to satisfy pedantry, I checked this, and the aviation program is currently a career pathway program, not a complete certified technical education program, but it falls into the same category, and it will be included in this Career and Technical Education Center. However, it is kind of a good example of the vocational opportunities, both and how those serve both students and businesses. I talked to the founder of that program, Eric Greenberger, and he said that this is kind of huge for students getting out into the industry, but also it's huge for the industry. He says that there's just a lack of workforce in the aviation industry in a lot of different areas. The program targets professional pilots, air traffic controllers, aviation maintenance, and aviation management for its career pathways for its students. And the way Wallenpaupack runs its aviation program and the opportunities that it offers means it's preparing its students really, really well to step immediately into those needed roles in the aviation industry. So before students leave Wallenpaupack's walls, they will already have a ton of the education that other students in other places would need to get as on-the-job training. So, for instance, one of the program's new-ish additions is a full simulator for flying Boeing 737 airplanes. And that's something where students often would not get the chance to encounter that until they were already kind of in the aviation industry and they were needing to play catch up. So this is something where the opportunities offered through this aviation program mean that students will come out of it fully prepared to and acclimatized to the demands of the workforce, and the workforce will have people come into it who are completely prepared. And that's, I think, broadly true across the career and technical education programs that these districts currently offer, and that will be fully supported through this new career and technical center.
Kind of cool to know that that's available to students there in the area as well, and then giving them a leg up when they move on to study that further. You mentioned the timeline for this tech center, kind of aggressive, looking to 2027 to open. What are some key milestones or decisions that need to happen to keep this project on track to meet that timeline?
Yeah, so the consultants offered a sort of milestone schedule. The main sort of marker that they're doing right now, they're in the design and permitting process. And they're saying that will sort of continue throughout 2025 into 2026. In March 2026, they're looking to put the project out to bid and award construction contracts in April, and then take the next year to actually build that building, with substantial completion to hit in July 2027. And it, in terms of sort of decision making that needs to happen in that process, a lot of it is that they presented on is more about like how they're going to run the building rather than how they're going to build it. It feels like at this stage in the process, everyone is kind of on the same page with this building needs to happen, this building needs to exist, and everyone's on board with that timeline of construction. This is sort of filling a huge need for Wayne and Pike counties, just to bring up something that keeps getting brought up when this is talked about. Wayne and Pike counties are currently the only counties in Pennsylvania that do not have access to a dedicated career and technical center. So this is something where basically the entire Commonwealth is behind this project and saying, yeah, we need to get you guys a career and technical center. The Pennsylvania Secretary of Education visited Lon Popeck in last December to sort of throw his weight behind the project as well. But then in terms of the construction, I think, is already kind of committed to and agreed to. And a lot of what's up in the air is the operation of the facility. The consultants presented kind of a preliminary outline of the costs for running this facility. They said they estimated that the revenues will be around $1.3 million and the expenses will be around $4.7 million. So roughly there will be like a cost of $3 million to run this facility as part of the school district's ongoing budgets. But they said a lot of the like decisions that will narrow that estimate down still need to be made. So it's talking about what other revenue sources there could be. They talked about potentially having like adult education classes or bringing in students from like other school districts as stuff that could happen, but the conversations still need to happen. They need to talk about like sponsorships, naming rights. They need to talk about like what programs exactly or what like things exactly are going to be contributed by each school district and what things are going to go back to each school district, transportation. So a lot of the details in terms of how this facility is going to be run will need to be organized out over the next 2 years.
That's River Reporter journalist Liam Mayo speaking about the proposed Wayne Pike Career and Technical Center and the broader role of vocational education in the region. You can find his full coverage at riverreporter.com. Liam, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Tim. Remember, you can hear Tim Bruno every weekday morning at 10 with live local news and conversations on Radio Chatskill, only on Radio Catskill. For our final story tonight, we're focusing on a topic of growing concern, measles. While most of us have never had to deal with measles, it's not a disease of the past, and recent cases in our region remind us it's still a serious public health risk, especially among the unvaccinated. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rabayo talked to Dr. Jody Golidic of Garnet Health earlier today. Dr. Golidic is board certified in infectious disease medicine, critical care medicine, and internal medicine.
Has there been an uptick in cases, measles cases, in our area recently?
There's been 4 confirmed cases in Orange County in about the last month. Those have been the first 4 confirmed. I think our concern is that there's been a large increase in measles across the United States, with multiple states seeing an increase in cases. And we've had over 1,000 cases year to date, which has exceeded the number of cases we had in total of last year. So although it's only 4 cases in Orange County, it's an uptick because we don't want to see any cases of measles if we can avoid it.
Let's start off with just explaining, just to remind folks exactly what is measles and why is it so contagious?
So measles is a respiratory virus commonly seen in childhood, is when most people get measles. Before vaccination, a lot of people would get measles in childhood. It's a respiratory virus spread by cough, by droplets. The issue that it's so contagious, it's very small droplets that can carry the measles virus that can go for a very long distance. So you can infect a lot of people with a relatively small inoculum of the infection. It's very, very infectious. If 10 people are exposed to measles, you'll expect 9 of them to get measles if they're unvaccinated. And it can linger in the air for a prolonged period of time, especially in indoor spaces. And so even if someone came in and has measles, they come into a general doctor's office, and it will sit in the environment in that doctor's office for about 2 hours. And so anybody coming in after the fact can get exposed and has a very high risk of infection.
Oh, wow. So what are some of the early symptoms that people should watch out for if they think they've been exposed to measles?
So some of it is cough, fever, runny nose. That's usually in the first 4 to 7 days. They'll develop sometimes small spots on their inner cheek called coplic spots that they can see. And probably the most notable thing of measles is the rash. And so between days 7 to 18, people will start to develop a rash, which usually starts on the face and neck, and it spreads downward. So it spreads down through the trunk and eventually reaching the legs and the feet and the hands. The rash itself usually lasts for about 5 or 6 days. People are contagious 4 days before the rash and 4 days after the rash. People can get very sick. They can get a cough. Pretty significant fevers. These are usually high fevers. And they also can get the red watery eyes, which we usually call conjunctivitis.
Why is it important not to go straight to the doctor's office if you suspect you have measles?
Because of the fact that it's so contagious, mm-hmm. and it can linger in the environment, it's important always to call ahead to see if they're capable of being able to isolate you and avoid you going into contact with other people that may be in the waiting room. So even the emergency department, we recommend calling ahead, urgent care calling ahead, doctor's office. In our facilities, if you call and we're referring you to the emergency room, staff will actually come and escort you to try to avoid coming into contact with other patients. Because, again, we don't know the vaccination status of all the patients or even family members, so we don't want to inadvertently expose people. So it's always important, if you can, call ahead. And that way we can make a plan, and your doctor's office can try to make a plan of what's the safest way to get you seen and tested.
So, you know, who is at risk for complications from measles?
So anyone that's not vaccinated, but the ones where we see the most risk are the very young. So children, typically less than 5 years old and less than 3. Immunocompromised patients, so patients that may have cancer, may have some innate immune deficiency. Pregnancy can cause complications. Those patients are at higher risk for things like pneumonia, encephalitis, which can make people very, very sick.
Wow. So now let's talk about the vaccine. As a young kid, is recommended you get the measles vaccine. So how effective is the vaccine and how does it exactly work?
So the vaccine, it's a two-dose series. It's a live attenuated vaccine. You can get it at your doctor's office. Typically, the first vaccine starts between when children are 12 to 15 months is when the first dose is recommended. After the first dose, it's 93% effective. You have to give it time to work. It takes 2 weeks. It's 93% effective in preventing you from getting measles. There's the second dose that occurs between the age of 4 and 6, so before children typically go to school. And that, after you get your second dose, it's 97% effective. And it's a shot. It's a simple shot that you get at the doctor's office.
Right. Now, we've seen an increase in vaccine hesitancy, especially stemming from the COVID pandemic that we've had and going through. How do you address the concerns of those who might be hesitant to get a vaccine?
I think the big thing is that you have to be very careful of misinformation. There's a lot of misinformation you can easily look up on the internet or that you may hear. Talking with your doctor or your pediatrician about what the vaccines that are recommended, it's a very safe vaccine. We've been giving the vaccine for many, many years. And I think the misinformation, it's not connected to causing autism. There's plenty of data for that. And just really trying to give people the correct information and trying to prevent, people can get very, very sick, and we've had deaths of measles, and we've had deaths this year of three people who have died of the measles that were, unvaccinated, and it's something that's avoidable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So now, summer is coming up. It's the end of this week is going to be summer, actually. School is going to be out, and folks are going to be traveling. What parents should know about vaccinating their children, especially, like I said, with summer traveling approaching and folks going on vacation, traveling to either foreign countries, locally here? What kind of advice would you give parents?
So I think the big thing is to talk to their pediatrician to see, is their child due for a vaccine? In some cases, if you're traveling to an area that's of concern, you can give the vaccine early to children. From 6 to 11 months, they can get an additional dose, and so that may be recommended by their pediatrician. You should really try to talk to, or your doctor, if you're concerned about your own vaccine status because you can't remember if you received it as a child. You can also talk to your doctor about checking antibodies. And if you are someone that's found to not be immune, or you've only received one dose, they can also give you another dose of the vaccine. So I think it's important to talk to your healthcare provider about, are you up to date on your vaccines? Are your children up to date? And if they're not up to date, or you're not up to date, can we try to give these vaccines? It's ideally to try to give them 2 weeks before you travel so you can give the vaccine time to work.
Doctor, knowing that there is an uptick in measles cases, how can communities like ours support public health efforts to sort of prevent a larger outbreak of measles?
I think one is to promote vaccination. Vaccination will prevent disease, and it's a very effective vaccine. To fight misinformation, make sure the information we're giving and people are getting at large is the correct information. Even a little bit of misinformation can cause a lot of fears and cause a lot of vaccine hesitancy, especially to parents. Educating the community on any signs and symptoms that, of measles, if they're concerned about measles, making sure there's information. So if there happens to be potentially someone that has measles, trying to prevent further spread by protecting the community and also trying to protect the patient from exposing others. So I think that's the big thing, educating on the signs, symptoms, how to avoid getting measles. If you do have measles, what to avoid, when you can go back to, living your normal, regular life.
Thank you so much, Doctor, for letting us know about the measles uptick that we have and how we can be safe and prevent a larger outbreak. Thank you so much for talking to us, and I do really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Patricio. Well, that's all the time we have for this program. I'm Jason Dole. I will be here on the Local Edition tomorrow night. I will be here for Radio Chatskill tomorrow morning at 10. I'll be filling in for Tim Bruno if you care to join me then. That'd be great. For now, stay with us. We got more news from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Tavern on Main, a neighborhood bar and grill on Main Street in Jeffersonville, featuring local American fare, Saturday and Sunday brunch, and Thursday trivia nights. Menu and hours online at tavernonmainny.com.
I'm Donna Fellenberg, host of Catskill Character. Join us Saturdays at 10:30 for stories from fascinating characters of the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania, right here on Radio Catskill.